Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Do It Now podcast. I am incredibly honored and excited today to welcome Tony LaShawn Wortherly. I want to make sure I get that beautiful name. Tony LaShawn Wortherly is a multi-talented artist hailing from Jacksonville, Florida, as a dynamic singer-songwriter, accomplished author, engaging speaker, and dedicated educator. Tony's life is centered around her profound relationship with Jesus Christ. Ooh, just right there, I want to stop. I love hearing that. And I love it when people write it and say it and share it and mean it. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your songwriting and your writing and your speaking?
Yes. So songwriting and music have always been a part of my life. Music has always been a part of my life. Songwriting I've been doing since I was young, really young, teenager. I started focusing on writing music, worship music, and music to exalt God in my early 20s. It's the music that I've written has gotten me through some really difficult times. So a lot of songs that I've written, honestly, are for me. But a couple of years ago, I actually released an EP with 5 songs on it that I felt like the Lord was leading me to release them to help other people. One of my favorite Bible verses is in 2 Corinthians, the first chapter, verses 3-5. And in summary, it says that God comforts us so that we can comfort others. And through writing, whether it's books or devotions or music, that I feel is the mission. It brings a purpose to the painful things that we go through in life. It gives an outlet for the joyful times we have in life. And so I just want to share the hope that I found in Jesus. I just want to encourage other people that no matter what they're going through, God is there for them. Like, I often say to my family and friends, I don't know how I would make it or if I would even be here if it wasn't for that relationship, if it wasn't for that hope, if it wasn't for that encouragement, having that foundation. So I'm very passionate about sharing my love for Jesus Christ, my relationship with him, and how he's helped me through obstacles in my life.
That is so beautiful. And so I agree with you so much about all of those things. And I feel the same way, that sometimes I wonder how people do get through if they don't have that support and that love and that faith, right? It's just faith and trust that everything is going to be okay because of him, right?
Right. That everything has a purpose, that everything has a meaning, and that I don't even need to know what that meaning is right now or in the moment. But I know that there's a plan and, you know, there's been certain instances in my life where God has definitely shown me, like, this is why this happened. And it's been years later. So, like, in the moment I'm panicking and I'm like, Lord, what are you going to do about this? But years later, he shows me, like, this is why this had to happen so that down the line you could be here.
Yes, I agree with you. I feel as if I've had to just surrender complete trust to his plan. That also allows me to worry less and have less anxiety, which I know is something that you have written about. Can you share about anxiety and how you started writing? Are you writing books about that? Or
I have a devotional that I've written about my battle with anxiety. I call it a battle. I used to call it a struggle. Now I call it a battle because over the last 6 months or so, I have been through some pretty intense therapy, and I've gotten a toolbox full of tools, weapons, if you will. So now it's more of a battle. Like, I'm facing it head on. I'm dealing with it. Whereas before, I did kind of let it take control. You know, I am a person with an anxiety disorder, but anxiety no longer has me, right? I have anxiety, but anxiety doesn't have me. And so God and my relationship with Jesus, that my faith has helped me through that journey, but it was faith plus therapy. I was diagnosed when I was 24 with generalized anxiety disorder, which was actually a relief to me because up until that point, I just thought that I was weird. I was strange. I didn't understand why my mind worked the way that it did. Mm-hmm. So having a diagnosis and having it explained to me that generalized anxiety disorder takes that normal anxiety that like everybody has. Mm-hmm. And because of chemical imbalance in brain, environment, different biological factors, psychological factors, because of those things, it takes that and it just like exacerbates it. And I catastrophize and I ruminate and I get in a thought spiral that I can't get out of. Mm-hmm. And as a Christian, that used to be so troubling to me because there's so many verses about not worrying and and trusting God. And I was like, am I not trusting God? Do I not have enough faith? Why do I worry so much? And so finding out that I actually had like a chemical imbalance going on in my brain.
Right.
That was actually a relief to me because it was like, okay, I'm not completely causing this. Right. Like I'm not the reason that I have this issue. It's just an issue. So now we need to figure out how to resolve it. So for most of my journey, when I needed to resolve that issue, I did take medicine. Mm-hmm. Because that was the easiest thing to do. Like the first time I was on medicine, I was in law school. And then after that, when I was studying for the bar, like I needed to be able to be focused. I needed to be able to sleep. I needed to be able to function. The thing about an anxiety disorder that's different from regular anxiety is that it disrupts your life. There's lack of sleep, lack of ability to concentrate, lack of ability to communicate well. Like there's a lot of things that happen that cause it to disrupt your life. Mm-hmm. So the best plan for me at that point in my life was to go on medication. And then there's been a couple of times in my life where I face tragedy, deaths of people that were close to me. And I struggled, that kind of triggered my anxiety to become worse and worse. So in those occasions, I had to go on medication. This last time when I felt like I was really battling and struggling with it, I went to my therapist, the therapist that I found, and I was like, hey, I want some medication. like I'm tired of dealing with this. I've tried to deal with it on my own. I've tried to do like the natural thing. I had another therapist. I tried to do talk therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy with that therapist. It did not go well. So I was like, I give up. I'll take the medicine again. And he was like, I know you want me to just get rid of the part of you that you don't like. But if that's what you want, I'm going to have to refer you to another therapist.
Wow.
Because what I want to do is to help you learn how to handle it, how to deal with it. I want to peel back the layers and see where it's coming from and give you the tools to handle it. And so that's when I say, like, now I have my tools, my weapons. Like, we went through, I would call it a painstaking process because I definitely made some phone calls to my mom where I was like, I don't like him and I don't like what he says and he's mean and I don't like it. And she was like, I love him. And my sister, who's also a therapist, was like, I love him. I love everything he's doing. So I stuck it out and I'm glad I did, but it wasn't easy to get to that point. But once I got to that point of breakthrough, I was like, I have to share this with other people. Obviously, there's not like a catch-all or a universal thing. But if I can just help some people out there who really just feel like they're under the weight of their anxiety, that's really what I want to do. And I feel like that is a purpose for me going through this, is so that I can share with other people the tools that I've learned. Give them some encouragement, some hope, help them to know that they're not alone, so they're not suffering in silence.
Yeah, no, I think that's incredible that you're even willing and brave enough to have the conversation, because a lot of people don't talk about it, right? Because there's in our society this stigma around it. And so I think that it's incredible that you want to talk about it and that you have you mentioned this toolbox, which is amazing with tools. You know, I call it my emotional first aid kit, where I have things I know that work for me, right? That I've tried, and they're tried and true things, like maybe, you know, meditation, hiking, breathing, exercises, acupuncture, right? Journaling. We all try different things. And then we find the things that work, we know we can turn to them in times of great crisis or trauma or anything. So this is incredible. Have you also been able to write about this? I know you mentioned you've been going and you've been talking on podcasts and being interviewed a lot, which I think is incredible, because I don't think enough people are having conversations about this. So I want to thank you for that. Is it also something that you write about? You were saying you write books, a devotional.
I have a devotional book based on my song, the song that I wrote, Don't You Worry. There's a devotional book based on that. And it's a 5-day devotion that I wrote that is on my website and on the YouVersion Bible app to reach as many people as possible, because so many people deal with anxiety. But basically, I took the thoughts that I had that led to me writing that song. I took the scriptures that comforted me in times of anxiousness. And I just kind of wrote out, like, you know, this is where I was, and this is how I handled it. This is how God led me through this, and where you can be. So it's a devotional journal. It gives you like some steps, some ways to check in with yourself, which is something that I thought I did. But until I started going to therapy, I realized I was not really doing. I was checking in with myself, but more like a to-do list kind of check off, like, okay, yep, I'm not feeling great today. All right, boom. Let me go and scroll on my phone or watch TV. Like, I was just like, like checking in, but not doing anything about it, not paying attention. And I think sometimes we do that. We kind of neglect those areas that we don't really want to think about, or maybe it's just me. I'm probably talking to myself, but I do that. It was pointed out to me that I have an issue with avoidance. Like, if I don't like it, if it bothers me, if it's too confrontational or controversial, or I just don't feel like dealing with it, I just avoid it. I just pretend like it doesn't exist. Right. I just try to move on with my life. And that usually comes back to bite me. So my book gives people an opportunity to check in, to have some encouragement from the Word of God, and to write out and journal their thoughts and feelings and things that are going on.
That's amazing. And can you share a little bit about things that you that have worked? Because you described a few things that haven't worked, right? Like, I've done the same, scrolling or watching a show, or, you know, what has worked for you? What are things that you can share with all of us?
So I am always one of those people that's like looking for like a formula or a solution. But I know not everything works the same for everybody. So I came up with like 3 steps that you can go through with your anxiety, rather than like, here's 3 things that you should do. So through my therapy sessions, it's kind of like the phases that we went through before I got to my breakthrough moment. So the first thing that we had to do was my therapist had to convince me to listen to my anxiety. So step one, listen to your anxiety, which is hard. Because my anxiety, especially for a person with anxiety and anxiety disorder, where you're catastrophizing and you are focused, hyper-focused on the worst thing that can happen, you don't always want to listen to that thought, right? It's like, oh, if I listen to that thought, then I'm going to take it down that road. But what I learned is, if I listen to that thought, I get to hear how incredibly ridiculous that thought is. So rather than being like, oh, I'm having this thought, I need to ignore it, now I actually listen to what the thought is saying. So like a general example would be, I'm a teacher, high school teacher. My principal comes by, my principal says, I need to talk to you later, Miss Wertherly, right?
Right.
Which, by the way, is the worst thing you can do to anybody who has any kind of anxiety. But anyway.
Good to know. Good to know.
Like, if you need to talk to me, I need you to give me a subject line in person. Right. Like, do not, like
don't leave it open-ended.
What is it about? Don't leave it open-ended, because what my brain does is it goes to all of the worst things that that conversation could be about, right?
Mm.
So for the rest of the time, until he's, from the time he says that to me until the time I get to talk to him, mm-hmm. I am preparing for the worst. I'm getting fired. I'm getting surplus. They're changing my whole entire schedule around. They're, you know, like whatever is mm-hmm. the worst thing to me in that situation, right? And then I'm taking those thoughts and then I'm formulating the conversation that I'm going to have with him about each of those things. And I'm having a fake conversation in my head. Like, if he says this, then I'll say that. And he says this, then I'll say that. And if he says this, then I'll say that. And mm-hmm. I'm trying to map out the conversation and like put out fires that haven't been set yet. Oh. Right.
It sounds exhausting, right?
It's exhausting. Meanwhile, at the same time, I'm trying to keep an eye on my class, make sure they're doing what they're supposed to do. Can't really concentrate on that. I'm not being my best. I'm not living my best. But if I actually sit back and go, okay, am I really going to get fired? Like, I've been there for 18 years. I've been highly effective every year. I'm not getting fired. Like, if I actually listen to what that thought is telling me, I can realize that is ridiculous. You're not getting fired.
Right.
That is not what he wants to talk to you about. You don't know what he wants to talk to you about, but certainly that's not it. So I had to learn how to not just say, oh my gosh, I'm having bad thoughts. Let me shut them out. Let me ignore them. Right. I had to learn to actually listen to those thoughts. And I realized, and maybe this is a byproduct of my creativity, my big, beautiful brain comes up with some really, really fantastical situations that could possibly happen that will never happen. And when I confronted in therapy that all these things that I thought would happen that are reasons that I went, you know, down a thought spiral, down a rabbit hole, that mm-hmm. they never actually happened in my life, which mm-hmm. is not to say that I haven't had bad things happen or tragic things happen or problems, but it's not the stuff my brain tells me is going to happen.
Right.
So when I listen to it, I can go, okay, she's lying to me. Like, okay, this is not possibly what's happening, but it's useful. Okay, so now I have what my brain thinks is going to happen because I listened. The next step is learn from it, because emotions, feelings, they aren't our identity, but they are indicators of what's going on with us. So what's really going on when I'm concerned about getting fired? What's really going on when I'm anxious about being left out of something? And when we peeled back those layers, I realized that what I was dealing with at the time when I went to go see my therapist was that I had not allowed myself to grieve. I had had several deaths in my life over a 3-year period.
Mm-hmm.
And they came so like consistently mm-hmm. that it was like I'd never got a chance to actually deal with the grief. And even when the grief did come up, I either was trying to stay strong for someone else who I felt like had more valid grief than me, if that's a thing, or I just needed, like, there were other things I needed to get done, so I didn't have time for the grief. But what happens when you don't deal with grief is it doesn't go away. It just manifests itself in different ways. And the way that mine came back was through my anxiety. And my anxiety just kept ramping up and ramping up and ramping up as I kept trying to, no pun intended, but bury the grief like over and over again. So as I learned, you know, listened to what my anxiety was telling me, I learned like, this is what's really going on. And so for people who are out there and they're having that, like once you figure out like, what is your brain telling you is your worst case scenario? Okay, now let's learn from that. Why is that your worst case scenario? What are you really afraid of. What is really going on in your life that isn't being dealt with? Mm-hmm. What do you need to talk to someone about? What's left unresolved? Because all of those things can maximize your anxiety and cause the duration of an anxiety episode to last longer and longer and longer if they're not dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, once you have that, it's like, okay, now, okay, I know where this is coming from. Now I can start to limit that anxiety. So I love grounding techniques. I've used them many times with family members and sometimes with students when they're like in the midst of a panic attack. And they work well,
mm-hmm.
but they're so very temporary if you're not coming from a place of knowing why, how you ended up in me a few weeks ago on a in a ball on the floor crying in front of your sink. But like if you don't know how you ended up there,
right,
then you know you can do your 5-4-3-2-1. So 5 things I see, 4 things I hear, 3 things I can touch, and 2 things I can smell, and 1 thing I can taste. Like you can bring yourself back into now, into that moment. But it only lasts for so long if you haven't done the work to figure out how you ended up in that moment in the first place. So grounding and gratitude are two of the main ways to limit anxiety. Looking at where I am now, being thankful for what I have now, being thankful for who I am now, being thankful for whose I am right now. I will tell myself, come back to now. Like, you're too far ahead. That hasn't happened yet. Come back to now. What's going on now? What's good now? Right. Look at what's happening now. What instead of what's the worst thing that can happen, what's the best thing that can happen?
Oh, so good. So good. I love hearing that. That's amazing. And I'm curious if singing helps you, because I have heard there was some study done that you can't actually be singing and be in anxiety or in a panic attack at the same time. Is that correct? Or is that your experience?
I've never tried singing when I'm having some sort of panic attack.
I'm just curious.
But I will say that coming out of them, or when I'm like really sad, when I'm whatever the situation is, singing, music, singing, dancing, anything music related will give me an instant mood boost. And singing has gotten me through so many times. Like even I'm the worship leader at my church. Wow. I don't know if that like leads to me being attacked more, but I feel like almost every Sunday morning there's something that happens before I go to worship that's like trying to make me be in a funky mood. But the minute that I get up and I usually start in my car, like on the way to church, and put the radio on, and I'm either rehearsing the songs that we're singing or I'm singing to gospel music on the radio. And as I sing and as I start to express, I kind of, you know, shoulders start to drop and I'm like,
okay.
Well, you know, maybe, start to calm down, start maybe to like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that is, it's a thing, right?
Yeah.
It's definitely a mood. It elevates your mood. And
it is a mood booster.
That's amazing.
It's a mood booster.
I love that you're the worship leader at your church. That must be fun. You must be an amazing singer. And you're obviously very joyful when you speak about it. So I'm sure you inspire others to be joyful.
It was one of the most unexpected blessings that I got about 10 years ago. It'll be 10 years in July that I took over as the leader of our praise team. And it has brought so much joy. Just our little group, our praise team. Like, I love my whole church family, but we're like a family. I say we're like a family. Well, 5 of them are, we are family.
A family? Okay. Like, really
are. Half the praise team is related to me.
Oh, wow.
my sister, my dad, my niece, my aunt, we're like, we are all actually related and up there singing, but but it's, you know, it's a family, we come together. And it's just been such a blessing to be able to share the gift. And it's a testament to how faithful and good God is and how amazing God is, because I am not formally trained in any way, shape, or form in music. I do not play any instruments. I sing by ear. I write by ear. I do, like, I have a little keyboard that I can figure out, like, the keys or the chord progressions that I want in a song to be able to tell someone else who is way more talented than I am, so they can put it into an instrument or into a computer and handle it. But the fact that I've been able to lead the music ministry for 10 years, having no formal training in music, and, you know, that is where God led me to, and he has kept me through it all. And, you know, I can honestly say, like, we don't get any complaints about the music, you know, so we don't have, like, any drama. It really has been an awesome time. So I love
that's so beautiful,
spending time with my praise team family.
And I know you've mentioned that, you've used your music ministry to promote mental wellness. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Besides obviously writing that beautiful song, what other ways do you use your ministry to promote mental wellness?
So I, when I released my EP, I was doing a bunch of interviews. And during one of the interviews, I was talking about Don't You Worry. And one of the moderators of the interview was like, well, have you done any work with, like, mental health and wellness? And I was like, no, because I'm not a therapist and I'm not a doctor, like, I'm not qualified to speak on mental health and wellness. So I never, like, thought about going down that road. But it stuck with me. And, you know, once I kind of had that breakthrough moment, I reflected and I was like, you know, every single song on my EP is the result of some sort of mental health crisis that I had gone through. Again, another thing, bringing purpose to pain. When I had been going through an identity crisis, for example, I wrote the song You Chose Me. When I was dealing with grief, I wrote Strength to Soar and I wrote Overcome. So I've been speaking on podcasts and promoting just mental wellness and trying to get people to talk. And my music has kind of, like, opened the door for that, so to speak. Oh, so
beautiful.
Yeah. So, and then I have some playlists, like, I call it the Strength and Serenity playlist, where, like, it has not only my music, but other music that I've used when I'm going through some sort of crisis, when I'm going through a downtime, a hard time. Like, it's different songs that have helped me to kind of come out of that. So I have that available for people to listen to if they want to add that to their list of playlists. But yeah, mainly it's just been, I've just been trying to get the message out, because one of the things that's so disheartening and that I did for a long time was just not talking about it to anyone. And I mean, like, not even my mother. Like, I didn't let anyone know that was going on, what was going on with me before my diagnosis. About 5 years before my diagnosis, it got really bad to the point where I was thinking about hurting myself. And I still didn't say anything to anyone. I didn't say anything to anyone until, like, 7 years later. And I told them about that because I had written it in the first book that I wrote, and I didn't want them to read it for the first time in the book. So, so that's when I told them. But I went through so many things by myself. I thought I was having Like, I thought I had heart problems that I'd never talked to a doctor or anyone about. And it turns out I found out years later that I wasn't having heart attacks. I was having panic attacks.
Right.
I didn't know what it was.
Right.
But I also didn't want to worry anybody, and I didn't want to be a burden to anybody. And I didn't want people to think that I was crazy and all of these different things. And so my main mission is just getting people to open up. And if I can get somebody to talk to someone, anyone, you know, it would be great if you can find a therapist to talk to, but in the meantime, find a trusted person to talk to. I personally have a no more trusted friend than Jesus himself. I talk to him a lot. So I say, and I'm going to backtrack a little bit. I say I went through it by myself, but I really didn't. Because like I said earlier, I would not be here if it wasn't for that relationship, if I wasn't talking to him about it. Because in that moment, when I was 18 years old, he is the one who brought me out of that moment. And it was through music. I was sitting at a desk and I was looking at a bottle of pills, and with no radio around or on or anything, a song from my childhood. And when I say childhood, I mean like from when I was a baby, came into my spirit and it stopped me dead in my tracks. And then I just started praying.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that I cannot express enough how much I want other people to have that. Like, it's like, you know, some people find a good thing and they want to keep it to themselves. I don't want to keep it to myself. Like, there's enough God to go around for all of us. Like, I want you to have him. I want you to know him. I want you to experience what it's like to get the weight lifted off of your shoulders, because he can carry it all and he wants to carry it. So for people like me who are like, oh, I don't want to bother anybody, I don't want to be a burden on anybody, God said, cast all your burdens on me, cast all your cares, like come to me if you're weary and heavy laden, like I will give you rest. And as great as my mom is, as great as my sister is, my dad, my best friend, like they're all wonderful people to talk to. As great as my therapist was, the best friend that I found to talk to was Jesus.
Yes. Yes. Well, I want to thank you, Tony, so much, because it's very meaningful that today was the day that I met you and had this conversation, because today would have been my brother's 51st birthday. He was born today, May 14th. And, he lost his battle with anxiety and depression. And so I have always sort of made it my mission to have the conversation and have the discussion, but there aren't very many people talking about it. You're a very, you know, courageous and brave and kind person to share of yourself, right? Because I agree with you. We just need to be talking about it more, having more conversations, more discussions. I always try to say to people, I don't have the right words to say, and I say a lot of the wrong words, but I'm just going to keep practicing and trying, because that's the only way for us to start having better conversations, right? So very meaningful to me to have spoken with you today about it. And I hope you will keep singing and keep sharing and keep getting stronger and stronger. And I loved hearing that you're a high school teacher. Boy, that must be, talk about a challenge. What grade do you teach?
All four high school grades. I have 9th through 12th graders, because I teach three different subjects. So one subject is, I teach law studies and legal systems. Okay. So I am putting my legal degree to use. I teach that's 9th through 12th grade. And then I teach Cambridge, in the Cambridge ACE program. There's this course in thinking skills.
Okay.
And that is all sophomores. And then I teach advanced placement, U.S. government and politics, which is juniors and seniors. So, yeah.
Thank you for this. I always say thank you for your service, because to be a teacher is amazing. Thank you for just sharing your story. And please keep sharing it everywhere. And I'm going to go find your music. And can you let everyone know where they can find you, how they can find you?
Yes, all of everything Tony LaShawn is on TonyLaShawnMusic.com, TonyLaShawnMusic.com. That's my website. And then my social media handles are Tony LaShawn Music or T LaShawn Music.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I will make sure that I put that in the comments underneath the description of the podcast, and I will share it everywhere. I'm so excited for you and your future. You're just glowing and bright and beautiful, and you have a beautiful, beautiful way about you. So thank you for coming on my podcast today. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Do It Now podcast, because the worst thing you could do to yourself is not become the person that you could be in this lifetime. Thank you, everyone, for listening.